What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another off-day edition of Meet Me at Mutual, which, being that we record this on weekends, is very rare to have, but, you know, that's the way the schedule works this year. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter, and not only do I have my regular co-host of Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily, and a Medlock one with me, but also one of our semi-regular co-hosts, a man who... Well, we're going to introduce anyway. He may not need an introduction, but we'll introduce him anyway. It's Kyle Reese from Birds on the Black and Kyle R416 on Twitter. And, of course, host of Prospects After Dark every Monday night on Periscope. Check that out unless you have scruples. And then just watch the first part of it, you know, the After Dark part. Yeah, you never know. Anyway, sorry, Kyle. Just giving you a hard time.
No, it's weird.
But it's fun. It is fun. Cardinals had their home opener last night, and we'll talk somewhat about what happened in New York and what happened in Milwaukee, but we'll take the most recent things first. Home opener last night, and the most dramatic thing, I guess, out of the home opener was the fact that Adam Wainwright came off the disabled list the day before. Jack Flaherty goes back to Memphis, and Adam Wainwright makes the start. Goes 3.2 innings. Might have been able to get through the fourth with a little bit better defense. It kind of looked like Adam Wainwright. Kind of looked like the Wainwright we've seen over the last couple of years. First of all, Alan, was it a good idea to run? I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight, but going into the game, was it a good idea to run Alan Medlock out there? Probably not. But Adam Wainwright out there.
Yeah.
What about that one?
Hey, I can compete. Don't sell yourself short. You know me. Whenever you and I were talking Monday and I heard kind of rumblings about him wanting that start, my initial reaction was an eye roll. I was like, oh, here we go. You know what I mean? But that was the kind of – I thought you had a great piece on it. I thought there were several people that did about how the pageantry of this moment was big to him because it could very well be his last one. That I was like, you know what, I've come around on it, you know, it's one start, but everything that I've heard after that is really concerning to me. Now, like I said, right after that first reaction, I was like, this could be huge for Waka to get this start. You know, this could be one of those maturation processes with him to get the start at home, and you never know where it would lead. Well, obviously, that was preempted by the staff, and Matheny in particular, thinking this was the better move. I think that's bull, the answer that we're getting. I thought it was all celebratory. I thought it was all pageantry. That's why he got the start. It didn't look any better than it did last year. You know, as Zach and the guys had pointed out, the drop in velocity all night was really telling. And I thought Mark Saxon on the Bernie show this morning really gave away a couple of clues. I mean, he used the line that the clubhouse was vague and weird of how they handled the Wainwright injury situation. Like, he wasn't healthy. Like, this was kind of a forced situation, that their hand was kind of forced in it. Didn't use those words. That was me reading between the lines. He did say vague and weird, and that the sentiment in the clubhouse is injury is an issue.
And that, I mean, it wouldn't be surprising. It wouldn't be unheard of. He wouldn't be the first Cardinal pitcher to pitch through an injury or come back too early. You know, Kyle, I mean, obviously, with your expertise being focusing on the minor leagues, guys, I mean, what does this mean for Jack Flaherty, and where were you standing on this?
Well, I don't know if you remember. It was probably the last time I was on with you guys, and it was right after the season. I asked if you thought that – what your thoughts on Adam Wainwright as one of the five best starting pitching options were at the time. And, you know, for me, that was I was leading you in a direction at that time, because for me, the answer was no. And, you know, that was heading all the way back to last season. And, you know, I'm all for Jack Flaherty being in the rotation. I think he's one of the five best options. I think he proved that in Milwaukee. And granted, it was only one start. But what he does extremely well. And that's pitch above average. You know, and sometimes he's above average. Sometimes he's good. Sometimes he can be great. But he does everything above average. And he was getting hit around a little bit in Milwaukee. But all of that is just to say that where I stand on it, I'm 31 years old. Adam Wainwright has pitched for the majority of my adult life as a Cardinal, and I just don't think the Cardinals can afford to be running on sentiment when they need to focus on winning games. And Wainwright doesn't get all of the blame for that. The Cardinals have, and to start the season, they faced three of the toughest starting pitchers in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly didn't do anything to help their chances to win.
No, but I do think, you know, like Alan said, I did write a post on it. Given what he means, and given the fact that, I mean, I think it would be a little bit different, maybe, if he had gone into spring and just been horrendous. And, you know, we were like, this really is just limping along. But there was at least some hope that, again, he may not have been the top five on the starters. I don't know about that. But it was enough that he could be competitive. At least there was a chance that he could be competitive. So I don't have a problem. And again, if the organization misses the playoffs by one game this year, you know, I so be it, I guess, to some degree. I don't think it doesn't usually come down to that. Can,
yeah.
We know that, but it doesn't usually. Now, of course, that does open the question of how long do you stay with Wainwright, because while there were some flashes in that game, it becomes more difficult, especially if Flaherty goes to Memphis and has a very strong start on Sunday. The push for something to happen is going to be pretty strong. Alan, again, you were talking about there was some, you know, at least some ideas that maybe there's some injury there, or at least they're laying the groundwork for that in case they want to put him on the disabled list. I mean, is that the only way this can really end?
I probably my most used statement, one of them on this show, is path of least resistance. And that's, I have a feeling that's the way that they will go with Wainwright. A return to the disabled list will probably be the easiest way the easiest decision they could make to ease this transition. It's funny, Kyle, I completely agree with you on this. Now, the on the Flaherty issue, he's taken that step that Weaver seems to have taken from the end of, you know, the end of 16 to where he pitched last year, to where I fully thought that if you can get into a playoff spot between he and Martinez, you have a pretty good shot of winning a couple games, to where now I think he's their best starter, being Weaver. I think Flaherty's taking that next step, and they've kind of painted themselves in a corner on this one because of his strong spring. So to kind of go back to that, to the question you asked, I do think that there's going to be some roster shake up here in just a little bit. I think a DL stint will be involved, and I think he'll be back up pretty soon. That also adds to the Holland coming back on Monday. That'll be another move. So there could be quite a bit of movement here pretty quick, and I just think that's the way that they may lean to. It'd be the first step in taking care of what's going to be a pretty painful decision.
Yeah, I just, again, I think Flaherty probably makes this. What, it, Kyle, he's starting on Sunday, right? Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. He'll probably make that start there. I still think they'll probably give Wainwright one more start, at least. I mean, we saw what Carlos Martinez did in his first start versus what he did in his second start. And I know this is completely something completely different, don't get me wrong, but it is possible that, you know, they'll give him one more shot, but that at least has to be short. And again, like we said, you don't miss playoff games by one or playoffs by one game very often, but you can miss them by 2, 3, 4 games. And you don't want that to snowball. So I don't know. I do think that if he struggles again next time, there's some sort of injury that puts him on the disabled list, and then we see after that.
I don't think that's going to happen. I've got this terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach that if he matches that start again, he gets another one, and he'll get another one. It's going to take a couple absolutely abysmal 5-6 earned run outings for them to pull him. I don't think he's magically going to say agree to going on the DL. I think he's going to fight through it. I think that's more likely than anything. That's probably what the track record would show too. That's what I think is going to happen.
You know what? You know, one thing that kind of concerns me about that as well is I could see Flaherty throwing up a clunker Sunday.
Yeah.
Just because he's pissed that he's down there, and then them using that as leverage that he's not ready. That's kind of my concern.
And not even throwing up a clunker, just throwing an average start. You know, sure. Not pitching as well as he did against Milwaukee, but maybe having another 5-inning performance where he lets up 3 earned runs, you know, where he's fine, maybe has a little control issue, probably because he's overthrowing, because like you said, he's a little emotional. We all know he was emotional after the game based on some of the comments that, you know, like not wanting to make any comments. And I think there was an Instagram post or something like that, again, with Jack Flaherty, where he tweeted out some lyrics to a song that were kind of like a little questionable at the time when he got sundown.
I missed that, but Instagram is apparently the place to be when you have problems with management.
If you're a Cardinal and you have problems with management, go to Instagram. But keep in mind that I don't have anything other than Twitter, so I don't know what's going on. I just hear stuff secondhanded, so it's probably a load. But you know, I don't think that there's an easy way to get out of this unless he puts up worse than how he pitched the other night, where they can't say, oh, well, he was close to the strike zone, or if the defense would have been a little bit better. You know, that's what they'll fall back on. That's my gut feeling.
I just thought there was so much. I mean, I know that he's made a career of doing this, but there were no easy outs. I mean, there was a lot of I know that the strike zone was questionable, but there was just no put away at all to anything. Now, I thought he had good movement. He just, man, he had to stay away from any hitting zone, and it was nerve wracking to watch the game. And I think that had a lot to do with the fact that it was 5 hours. You know what I mean? Pitches too early. It was tough to watch. I will say that.
Well, and that has been Wainwright's MO for at least a couple of years, if not longer, that he will so often run up those laborious pitch counts of 100 pitches in 4 to 5 innings. And that's not, I mean, that's another reason why you have to start thinking about it, because if he can't go 5 or more innings on at least five on a regular basis, then you're just overly taxing your bullpen in a situation where we know that there's plenty of bullpen arms, but still, they're going to need a lot of usage too. You know, we've already seen what Mike Matheny wants to do with Bowman and Jordan Hicks, which I hate to even mention Jordan Hicks with Kyle on the line, but we'll probably get to that in a little while. And Kyle, you very well may be right. You're right. That would line up with what we have seen in the past. And I meant to ask you, you know more of Flaherty's personality and stuff like that. I was a little surprised to see him so, I guess, emotional about that. I mean, because even though he pitched so well, this was always seemed to be the line, whether it was now or a week down the way, when Adam Wainwright was coming back, he was going down no matter how well he had pitched, just because that was the only option.
Yeah. He's a bulldog. You know, I don't, a lot of people might not remember it, but last year in September when he got called up to the Cardinals and he was struggling, you'd see him kind of get at Carson Kelly a little bit in those last couple starts. And it was funny because the two of them have a great relationship. And I can remember a couple times where you could see that he was at odds with Yachty a little bit as well. It just, he was so successful last year
And at the end of the year, he wasn't successful. He didn't have command like he did. He was worn out. And I just kind of chalked it up to him being, you know, just a little worn out and a little angry and a little upset that he didn't have command of his pitches. But I think this shows a guy who does have a little bit more competitive fire than I realized. But he's a straightforward talker, and you know, he comes across that way. He comes across as confident. So, but as far as like this level of whatever you want to call it, I've never heard of anything like that from him.
Well, he definitely needs to be careful about you know, disagreeing with Yachty, because that's a good way to be in Memphis.
Yeah,
you know, we know who runs the team.
Ask Jordan Hicks.
That's right. It works both ways. So, anyway, so yeah, that's kind of where we're at. And again, the situation isn't going to get any better because, you know, even though Alex Reyes doesn't come back until beginning of June, he's going to come back, it seems like, as a starter, which means that you have, you know, seven starters basically. For five spots when you count Flaherty and Reyes. And by that time, who knows? I mean, you can have somebody else about ready to make that step. So he's going to have to produce and getting out of it, though. And this is not necessarily limited at the Cardinals or how they approach things. I think every team can run into some things like that. I mean, the Twins have kind of struggled with Joe Mauer at times because he's that hometown boy that's always been their guy, and he's not produced as well. And so when he gets down to the end of his contract, what do you do? You know, there's other teams as well that if you've got that, the downside of face the franchise or icons that stay with their team for 1 year, for their whole career is, it's very tough to get them out the door.
Yeah, and even so with pitchers, you know, not as far as like staying with one team for a long time, but CC Sabathia, you know, it took him a second to like regroup after he lost his velocity and he was terrible and was an impairment to the Yankees and their rotation. And then the guy who I keep bringing up, who I brought up since last year, is Jared Weaver. Mm-hmm. It just seems like the velocity drop guys who do have good stuff, they can only do so much. And you're right, it's hard to cut bait with the guys that you've hung your organization on, like, onto for multiple years. And that's where the Cardinals are at with Waino.
Yeah. And he's under contract for $20 million this year. It's not something the Cardinals necessarily want to just release him while they're paying that money. Not that they wouldn't, but given the way this organization is, some organizations might, but I don't see this organization unilaterally releasing Wainwright. You know, it's a DL, you know, keep him on the DL for most of the year, or it's, you know, let's talk about how can we, you know, some sort of negotiation with him of how can we do this? Because it doesn't look, and Alan, you can weigh in here. It doesn't look to me, I mean, besides the fact that the bullpen is stacked, it doesn't look to me that, you know, he's really a guy that you want to go out there and throw into a game as a bullpen pitcher.
Yeah, it's a worrisome situation. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I know that's one of those we, you just want to say, okay, well, he's going to the DL, or they're going to release him or something like that. So it's just so difficult to do, and you're right. I don't see any situation where they would release him or try to embarrass him. It's going to be a little bit on him. Well, I'm sure that he's the best.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I know that there's enough people on the hot seat right now, I presume, that I think decisions have to be made rather quickly and not be as stale as they have been the last 2 years.
That's true. That the two years of missing the playoffs may force a little bit of a hand here as well. All right, well, I don't know that we're going to come up with any solutions there. Let's talk a little bit about what we've seen out of this team over the first week. Kyle, what stood out to you as you saw them play, especially the Mets and the Brewers, but even last night against the Diamondbacks, whatever that game was?
The first thing that sticks out to me that I think is getting glossed over because we're all a little reactionary, mostly because of the Matheny issue, which is him as coach, and because of 2 years of not making the playoffs, we're all a little on edge to start this season because we want change, and I think we all kind of think this team is better and capable of more. But the one thing that's really stuck out to me that I think is getting glossed over is they've faced probably 3 of the 10 best pitchers in baseball, or in the National League at the very least, and they struggled against them. And that's not to be unexpected. You want them to succeed against those guys, but it's easier said than done. And they're hammering the pitchers they're supposed to hammer. And I'm not as torn up about how this first weekend week is gone as a lot of other people are. Now is the time. They've worked through Robbie Ray. Now is the time, and they'll have Greinke tomorrow. But it's a time to buckle down and get after it, because Greinke is a kind of a shell of himself. If you can get to Greinke a little bit, then things change, maybe in the perception in the locker room. Maybe you get a little monkey off your back because Greinke's kind of owned the Cardinals for years. That's really what stuck out to me. When they've had a chance to hammer against pitchers that aren't high caliber, they've hammered, and they've struggled against the best in the league.
It's funny. I had actually brought that up to Daniel this morning. He and I were kind of going back about some stuff, and I feel like I don't know why. I just have a feeling they light up Greinke tomorrow, and it's just for that same reason, because I just don't think it's the same guy that we're used to seeing. And I've always felt like there was I don't know if it was the Kansas City connection or what, but there seems to be a rivalry with him.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty confident tomorrow. And then you turn around and on Wednesday, I'm telling you, I'm high on Weaver right now. There's not many guys not named Scherzer or Kershaw. The list gets a little bit short after that I think has an outright advantage over Weaver right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd go that far, but you're right. I like him. I don't know. The first time through the rotation didn't impress me that much. I mean, it was good. Obviously, there were some good outings like Weaver's, but nobody went deep. Even Michaelis went 5.2. That was as deep as it got. Now, obviously, Carlos coming around the second time and pitching much more like the Carlos we would like to see helped a lot. But I'm still kind of iffy on some of the things. You know, what's Michael Walker really going to do? I'll be interested to see how he turns out tomorrow. Can we extend these guys like Weaver and into the sixth and seventh? Because as much as I like these bullpen arms, you know, they got to have some rest at some point in time. I want to see the starters go deep too. So I'm greedy like that, I guess. But
yeah.
So I don't know. I think that, like you said, Kyle, they are beating up on people and teams that they should beat, and that's more than we could say this time last year.
Yeah.
So there is that kind of thing going for them. I mean, if they can play 500 against playoff teams and play much 600 or 700 against sub 500 teams, they'll be great. We'll just have to see if they can do that. Of course, I watched some of the Reds and Pirates today, and the Reds shouldn't be that problem. I mean, they should be able to put some runs up there. I mean, Yovani Gerardo was just waiting to be beaten up on.
Yovani Gallardo, the Reds' bullpen upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, the upgrade that just gave up, 6 runs in a third of an inning. So,
nice.
Yeah, that's... they went from down 4-2 to 14-2 in 2 frames. So
yeah.
That's fun. But so they got to win those kind of games, and hopefully they will. Kyle, what do you think of the new acquisition? I mean, Marcell Ozuna, I had a laser shot in Milwaukee. He seemed to have been overshadowed a little bit. At least he was for a while this year. Even though he's the new guy, it seemed like we were focusing on every other thing but him, but so far so good.
Yeah, I've been impressed. I love watching him hit. I love watching him play around on the base pass. You can tell he's playful. You can tell that he's just something different, and that's refreshing.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that clubhouse can seem really stuffy, but I like him. You know, not to go and start pointing at some of the things he does poorly, but if you didn't see a ball come out of his hand when he throws it, you would watch his throwing mechanic and think, wait, what's that guy doing out there? Because, I mean, his arm is so compromised out in the outfield still. It just, I mean, he keeps his arm really close and he doesn't have full rotation. And it's obvious. It's painfully, painfully obvious. And I mean painful because every time he throws a ball, I can feel my shoulder in pain. But I'm impressed with him. I like him a lot. I love what he brings to the middle of the order. And sure, it hasn't necessarily manifested with big home runs, except for the one that we saw in Milwaukee, which was a monster shot. He's become a good, solid anchor, and it's just a matter of how the pieces kind of move around him.
Last night's ball probably gets out in the summer.
Yeah.
I would think. He and Fowler both. But you know, one thing that has really impressed me with him, and I kind of feel bad for selling him so short for forever. He's a good left fielder.
Yeah.
He is a guy. He's impressive. He covers a lot of ground for as big as he is. And I understand about his arm because you could kind of tell that he favors it. And but he covers line to line well. He's pretty impressive. I'm really impressed defensively with him.
Yeah, it's been, you know, I haven't gotten to see, I think, maybe just one game, I think, so far. So haven't seen a lot of him. But you're right. It has been nice to have that idea that even just last night, you know, you get one runner on and you've got that threat, serious threat, to tie a ball game up. And so that is nice. Now, you could argue maybe he'd be more effective if there were a few more runners on in front of him. I don't know if you want to argue that or not, but it still feels like, to me, something's still off of Matt Carpenter. You know, I've written about it the last couple of days. You know, he's getting pretty close to 50% of his at-bat or plate appearances are a walk or a strikeout. And, you know, we were seeing that a lot last year. I don't know if it's, you know, he's getting replaced in the, you know, sixth inning, seventh inning for defensive purposes. I mean, Alan, what do you think? Is there something still wrong with him, or is it just him getting into the groove?
I'm not sure he's compromised. I think it's still a situation of just a getting-to-know situation. I'm trying to bring up – I've had some computer issues here. But, you know, I agree with you with what you say about half his at-bats. But I'm a big fan of the walks in that spot. So, because then that brings up Ozuna with guys on base. So, I'm trying not to overreact with the lineup right away, because my biggest fear is that they're going to start switching stuff around again, and I just don't think that's the right move. I think they need to stay the course with what they're doing now, and I think it's all going to come out in the wash. Fowler is a notorious slow starter. I just don't want to pull the plug on this. I think that this lineup is how it needs to look for the team to work out.
And so far, that's what Matheny has done. I mean, somebody put it up on Twitter for the first, you know, seven games. Every position the lineup has been exactly the same except the eighth spot, which is rotated between Wong and Jerko, and then of course Munoz yesterday. Kyle, where do you come down in on what Carpenter's doing?
Yeah, you know, I my concern with Carpenter right now is he seems like he's taking like really, really off balance swings out in front of the baseball, and not only on breaking pitches but on fastballs, and that's really uncharacteristic. And I don't know exactly what it is. You know, I guess it's a fun narrative to say that ever since he called his own number on the bunt, his swing's been a little off. That's probably more coincidence than anything. But it just – the swing seems off right now. The approach seems off right now. And, you know, maybe that's because he's circling back to being the hitter he was when he was at his most successful. Maybe it's because there is a lingering injury issue. That's, you know, highly speculative. I am a little worried about him, but we're back home. He got a day off, and maybe that's just enough to clear his mind and get him back in the swing of being Matt Carpenter.
And hopefully so. It is kind of funny that he said in the offseason that he was going to cut down on the home runs so he could cut down on the strikeouts, and he's still striking out at a decent rate. And like you said, with some really, really weird-looking swings. But, you know, Alan, you're right, too. If he can, you know, draw enough walks in that spot, that's not a bad thing either. It's not exactly what you expect out of your number three, but that doesn't mean that it can't be that. I don't know. Now, Kyle, you will... Go ahead, Alan.
No. I mean, he's got one of the team's seven doubles, leads the team in walks, and then he's middle of the road on strikeouts. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like there's overreaction on that just yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we can't overreact, though, what are we doing? I mean, that's kind of what we're supposed to do on this show and podcast and everything else, right? But Kyle, you'll know this better than I. And I referenced it in a post this week, but I was under the impression that Munoz's glove was average. And yet he is now the go-to defensive replacement for Matt Carpenter. I mean, is that a little strange?
No, it's crazy. I mean, it's crazy, and the way they're using him is poor. And he has a chance to be an average or above average, somewhat utility player, but it's not there yet. You know, so the knock on Munoz before he entered the Cardinals organization was that he was prone to lapses in concentration, and it's gotten better year after year, as it usually does with kids that age. And you know, it was whatever. But the problem is that if you've got a kid who's never had an opportunity to play at the major league level, who's only coming in spurts, the concentration is not going to be there. The ability is not going to be there. And that's what we're seeing with Munoz. We're seeing it in at-bats where he gets brushed off the corner on an inside pitch and he's shaking his head even though it's a strike. You know, that you just usually don't see that, you know, even nowadays out of kids in their first five at-bats. But anyways, no, it's a terrible idea. The double switching is stupid, and I don't mean that to just bash on the manager. I mean it to just bash on the idea of double switching out your three hitter.
I wonder to some degree. I mean, again, we saw the error that happened in Martinez's game, and we saw that he has struggled at somewhat with at the bat. He's not hitting like he was, especially early in the spring. I mean, Is there a chance? I mean, I know obviously Bader's up right now, but I don't know, and I don't know what Jerko's long-term plan is, but is there a strong chance that when Jerko is healthy, that Munoz is the one that goes down?
Yeah, I would think so.
I agree with that.
Just depending on how the roster all shakes out, I don't know why you would do anything else.
Kyle, I'm glad you brought that up about the concentration factors. I never would have noticed that, but it makes a ton of sense, especially on the strikeout last night, or on the late in the game, on the 2-2 pitch where the breaking ball's inside and it brushes him back, and how he postured on that.
Yeah.
But if you remember about three or four pitches before that, Danny Mac had mentioned that he and Chris Owens had gotten into it at first base. Said that Owens was saying something to Munoz the whole time, that Munoz had done something. So I'm wondering if that's kind of the same thing, the mildness in there. To me, the lights are too bright for him right now. I think he's been exposed. But it just seems like it's a little too fast for him right now. I think he'll be a contributor at some point, but I think he'd benefit from every day at bats at Memphis.
Which is pretty much what Kyle was saying, you know, in spring training. But, you know, it's not that they're listening to Kyle. So,
you know, it's just, you get lost. Like, even the Cardinals right now, they're kind of lost in the excitement of their own prospects. And, you know, fans do it, and rightfully so, because, you know, fans see stats and get excited. And that's baseball. That's the beauty of fandom. But, you know, if the organization's doing it, then it's problematic, then it's troublesome. You know, that's my issue with Munoz. He has a talent. He has the ability, and it could very well manifest itself. It's just, why rush it along if you don't have to rush it along? You know, that's, which I'm sure we'll get to Jordan Hicks too, who is about as immensely talented and maybe even of anybody in the organization, and is proving how valuable of a piece he can be in the bullpen. But just like with Munoz, why rush it along if you don't have to rush it along?
Sure. I'm a big fan of an organization showing that you can make a team. That you perform well in spring, you turn some heads, you can make the team. I don't know how much water that holds if they immediately go down, which is going to be the situation with both. So I agree with you. You know, I like the fact that they show that, hey, you play well and we'll notice. But then it's like, well, you know, those spring stats don't matter. You're going back down.
Well, and also in the same vein, you make the point that, yeah, sure, it doesn't matter how – if you perform great, you'll make the team. You know, that we'll reward good performances. But then, you know, I love Jordan Hicks. I can't say it enough. I'm a huge fan of him. I think he has tremendous stuff. I think he's fantastic. What I'm about to say is not an indictment on him any more than what the organization made it out to be. But then in the same vein, you have Jordan Hicks, who you sent away from Major League camp because he wasn't showing up on time,
mm-hmm.
who makes one appearance, and then he's on the roster. So within the two minor leaguers, you're setting a double standard. You know, that, oh, sure, yeah, look, if you work hard, if you perform in spring training, we'll find a spot for you. And then also, but if you come in at the last minute, you could also get a spot, too, if Yadi says that you're his guy. You know what I mean? Like, and that's, again, that's not to disparage what Jordan Hicks is capable of or what he's doing. But it's just, to me, there's a little bit of a hypocrisy there. You know, especially, to your point, if you are going to have to just send them right back down.
Yeah.
Or if, you know, you're not going to allow, if they're not going to be allowed the opportunity to make an impact.
Which, I mean, you look at with Mike Myers right now, especially with the fact he's pitched, you know, opening day, I think, and that was the last time we've seen him, even though
terrible.
We've seen everybody else. And that, yeah, I mean, there shouldn't be that. But it feels to me somewhat of, it's a little bit of desperation. Like the organization is flailing a little bit to try to find that lightning in a bottle that will get them back to the postseason. And when, you know, when Munoz was hitting well in spring, they latch on to that, and, you know, then they see Jordan Hicks and they think, well, we can, you know, we've got, it almost feels like, as even though they're not saying it in public, they feel like they have to win this year, and they're going to try to grab anything that can, you know, hopefully spur them and ride it as long as they can and toss it aside when necessary, and even to the detriment of the long-term plan, which is so unlike the Cardinals. But I mean, I don't know that there's any other explanation for Jordan Hicks, especially being on this roster.
Yeah, I think that's the best way of putting it. You can feel the desperation. You can feel like the aggressive moves that maybe aren't aggressive. Maybe they're more flippant than anything.
Yeah, it's just not. It's not planned out. It's, you know, you never would have expected this organization to, you know, make the 40-man roster moves like they did there at the end. And, you know, Greg Holland's a little bit different because he was available at the last, you know, and we don't know when when his side budged or anything of that nature. That just kind of fell in their laps, I think. But the other stuff, you know, which, again, moving Carson Kelly down to Memphis is actually a good idea. Since Francisco Peña still hasn't gotten a bat yet. But some of this other stuff, use this as a transition thing, but Kyle, I was a little surprised they were actually able to get anything for Breivik Valera, especially Valera, but also Josh Lucas. Were you, and can tell us a little bit about the guys that came back.
Yeah, I was both surprised and excited about the prospects that came back. You know, Breivik Valera, the one thing that kept him on the team, that kept him on the 40-man, was the fact that he was a left-handed bat more so than anything. He also had a pretty solid contact tool. So, you know, I guess if all things are the same, it makes sense. So we'll start with him. They traded Breivik Valera to the Dodgers for a 22-year-old power-hitting outfielder named Johan Mieses. I'm almost 100% sure that that's his actual name. I think we're doing it right this time, which doesn't always happen with pronunciations. But yeah, I think we're doing it right. Anyways, he's a big power, big strikeout, kind of a big stout-bodied gentleman. And he's going to hit for power. He's going to strike out. He's played center field. He's probably a perfect little right fielder. He has a pretty strong arm, and he's made some sensational plays out in right field. Without having a chance to really get it, you know, watch him day in and day out, it's hard for me to exactly say how consistent he is out there. Of course, but he's really impressed me with what I saw in just highlights and everything. And he hit a home run tonight, his first home run as a member of the Cardinals organization. It was a two-run shot for Palm Beach. He's had two great games. I think he was three for his first five or five for his first seven with Palm Beach. He's a really, really, really interesting guy. And more than likely, he won't move up the organization very quickly because of his strikeout potential. But he's another outfielder. And it's funny, we spent a lot of time beating up the organization for building outfield depth, but he was able to be inserted right into the Palm Beach outfield, an outfield that's pretty weak. And then you actually look at what Springfield has in the outfield, which right now, because Randy Arozarena is in Memphis, because Harrison Bader is in St. Louis, right now your Springfield outfield is Lane Thomas and then two minor league journeymen who the Cardinals are trying to optimize, optimize value with. They're trying to, these guys have re-engineered their swing and they're trying to introduce power into games into a game that they otherwise didn't have power. So, Mieses is a really, really interesting guy. It's funny here. I'll be able to say Mieses' name. But the next gentleman's name I will butcher, and it's Meisner Meisner. He's a 6'7" tall pitcher that they got in exchange for Josh Lucas from the A's, and he's a big boy who has trouble repeating his delivery. He throws a fastball, changeup, slider, kind of a weak curve repertoire. He has a low 90s fastball. He just doesn't command things because he's big and it's hard to repeat your delivery and your motion. But anyways, a long rant to say, they're two really interesting guys who help supplement the organization in areas that needed supplementing. And, believe it or not, the outfield needs supplementing, and you can never have enough pitchers. So, yes, I was surprised that the Cardinals were able to get something in return. I was more surprised that Josh Lucas was let go of the way he was. Right. But they, at least they got another pitcher, an intriguing pitcher, back in return, and two kind of wild cards.
Yeah, I mean, again, that when you designate people for assignment, you know, to even be able to trade them rather than them just reaching the waiver wire is pretty impressive. But to get something back that at least, like you say, is a lottery ticket wild card type of thing, you know, there's at least a chance that it pans out. We'll have to wait and see. Let's just go ahead and take this. We'll swing back around to the Major League club here in a little bit, but while we're already in the minors here, Collis, you know, the rosters were released. The full season teams have kind of started playing. Give us some of the things that you were surprised by, some of the things that you maybe were disappointed by out of the rosters.
Well, the first thing, we knew that Carson Kelly going down to Memphis would have an impact and move Andrew Kisner to Springfield. And like you said, that's the best thing for both of them. It's a bummer to think that about Kisner, because Kisner could probably come up and do pretty well at AAA, I would think. But for the health of the organization and the long-term health of both these prospects, it's okay that Kisner's at Springfield and Carson Kelly's at AAA. That's the first thing. And that's probably the thing I get asked about more than any anything else. Because of Harrison Bader, like I said, Harrison Bader becoming a major leaguer, entering onto the 25-man of the Cardinals, Randy Arozarena found his way up to Memphis. And Memphis, for the most part, unless they're playing other NL teams, affiliates, they'll be using the DH. So they'll be able to get all four of their outfielders there some time. Other than that, the only like big gripe that I had, if I had to choose a big gripe, was I was pretty upset that Ryan Helsley didn't find his way into the Memphis rotation. Mm-hmm. But it appears that the reason for that had more to do with the Cardinals planning to send Jack Flaherty down, you know, when they sent him down. And that, you know, they had to get clever about the roster. Connor Jones was the one who got the promotion initially to Memphis. It would have been easier to just give him a spot start than to have Ryan Helsley buoy back and forth, who they're trying to, they're trying to anchor down. So that's kind of what happened there. As far as disappointments, I wouldn't say I had very many disappointments. I think people were pretty anxious to see Delvin Perez get a chance in Peoria. They're going to have to wait a little bit longer. That didn't happen. I was kind of surprised that Scott Hurst didn't find his way onto a full season club. Scott Hurst was the third round pick, the Cardinals' first pick in the 2017 draft. And the seventh round pick, Chase Pinder, who, if you've been following along, you know that I'm really high on, he ended up jumping Scott Hurst. Chase Pinder is in Palm Beach, anchoring their center field. As far as if there were any big shocks or concerns or anything like that, not really. I was a little, I guess the only other one I could think of, we were talking about him earlier, the Cardinals signed a middle infielder named Ramon Urias out of the Mexican League this winter. And Urias is a really interesting guy who started hammering and raking in the Mexican League. But I thought for sure he'd start in Palm Beach, even though he's older. He's 23, because that's kind of the same path that they put Randy Arozarena on. But in their minds, Urias is more along the lines of like Jag in his development, Jose Adolis Garcia, than he is Randy. So, and then even more interesting than that, Urias didn't even get a chance to play in Springfield's game. Because of the major league roster moves and what might be described as churn in the organization. And so now Urias is part of the Memphis roster. So that just goes to show you how quick all of this stuff changes in the minor leagues. My impressions are Peoria is a really interesting team. Palm Beach is a really interesting team. Springfield's kind of boring, actually. And Memphis is going to rake. They're just going to rake and rake and rake, and there won't be any leaves left on the lawn.
It is kind of funny that you say Springfield's boring when, you know, at least like your two favorite prospects are sitting on that roster. But you're right. I mean, partly from following you and Colin and the work that y'all have done, I look at these rosters and that's probably the roster I don't know as many names for. I mean, I've kind of some of them I've heard, but they're not, you know, in your rankings and stuff like that. They're either lower down or they're all, you know, Memphis is just fairly top heavy right now.
Yeah, that's Memphis is good. Memphis is going to be good, and you know, Jack Flaherty is going to be there, so they'll have a major league starter in their rotation, which is good. And man, that outfield is going to rake. And it's really exciting, really electric. Max Schrock has not let anyone down in his first two games in the organization. With Gyro Munoz, acquired for Steven Piscotty, Max Schrock is a second baseman. I think he had four hits again tonight, hitting like 600 or something like that in two games. Extra base hits, had a home run yesterday. Memphis is super exciting, and Patrick Wisdom's doing what Wisdom does. Carson Kelly's there. Like, that's a pretty advanced roster. They could very well be close to, depending on, you know, how the roster shakes out all year, they could be very close to how many wins they put up last year. So yeah, Memphis is super top heavy.
Yeah, and then if and when they lose Flaherty to the big league level, then that's when Helsley will slide into that spot and not drop off much at all.
Yeah,
don't forget a couple of weeks of Alex Reyes, possibly.
Yeah, as he does his rehab start, he'll probably get down there too. Very interesting stuff all the way around. And I know, you know, because of some matchmaking, I continue to watch Dylan Carlson. I see that he is back at Peoria, and I know you and I talked about that with the idea that they didn't really want his bat in the dead zone that is Palm Beach.
Yeah, but the roster at Palm Beach is really interesting too, because Evan Mendoza, who is relatively young for being a draft pick. He was 21 all last year. He's a third baseman. He was drafted in 2017. They put him at Palm Beach, and that really surprised me. And Kramer Robertson's at Palm Beach. Stefan Troskler and Andy Young are at Palm Beach. I was really surprised by how the Palm Beach roster was constructed. But I like the fact that Dylan Carlson stays in Peoria because it gives him a chance to rake a little bit, to hit a little bit before he ends up getting a promotion. You know, it's never good to have a guy spend two straight years at a level, but when the guy's 19 years old, it's perfectly fine to have him spend two straight years, start two straight years at a full season affiliate. So for him to go back to Peoria is good. It's a great learning environment. They have good coaches there. And, you know, he's a really solid outfielder, but he had a double. He smacked a double last night. They didn't play today because they got snowed out or rained out or some nonsense like that. And I have a big high hopes for Mr. Carlson. And I'm anxious that you're going to get to follow along with him, like that you have interest there. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's good stuff.
That's right. Alan, you got anything for Kyle while we're still sitting in the minors talk?
I know that you were busy tonight, Kyle, but while you were giving the rundown, I went ahead and looked at some of the line scores. Care to beat up Helsley at all tonight?
No. So I was kind of like watching and following along on my phone, and it seemed like he let up one run through the first four innings, but he wasn't striking out anyone, which was a concern to me. And I didn't see where his pitches were. I didn't see what he was overthrowing. More than likely, he was missing with the fastball. Sure. That's my guess. I did check my DMs before, while I was DMing back and forth with you, and Colin said that he was getting the high curveball for a strike. He was getting it over for a strike, which is really good. That's like I want to see him use that high curveball, especially outside on right-handed hitters and outside on left-handed hitters. It seemed like all those runs came in the fifth and sixth inning. He let up a run in the first or second inning. And then the other four runs came, and I three of them came on a home run, I think, in the sixth. I hate that he tuckers out, but that's starting to become the trend for him. If the strikeouts don't continue, that concerns me. And without knowing what his velocity was, I'm not so worried about that. But part of me wonders, especially because he only had one strikeout through like the first three innings, and that's so unlike him. He usually racks up strikeouts early. It makes me wonder what range his velocity was in. Sure. And again, kind of like what the Cardinals faced in New York, it's like 30 degrees in Springfield, although they're not in Springfield. I don't know. Yeah. They're in
Midland.
Yeah. They're in Midland. That's right. Yeah. So I don't know what the temperature is there, but anyways, I'm not worried about it, but I want to see his velocity. I'm going to try to watch that game tomorrow, just to get a good feel for him.
Yeah, I will say this too. This is a question to you to start out. Is there any issue of disappointment with him going back to Springfield? And I'll let you answer that, but I will tell you, anytime performance is bad in Midland, it doesn't surprise me because that bus trip has got to be brutal.
Miserable.
I can only imagine. I know that, with the drillers here, and we used to have season tickets here for a long time, and I got to know quite a few of those guys, and I got to know quite a few of the administration and management with them. And that was the biggest complaint about in the Texas League. They were just like, man, those bus trips to Midland, then you go to San Antonio, and then back through Frisco. That's not so bad, they said, but that's why Midland wins the league every year. A, they're, yep, they're good. Oakland keeps them loaded up, he said, but it's just so hard to play.
Yeah, yeah, it's an actual fact that people hate making that bus trip to Midland. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an advantage for them, but still, they got Springfield was still, they still got in a little bit earlier. You know, they should have been fine, but that's a very, very, very solid point. It's a very solid point.
And that is interesting. I mean, we talk about park factors and stuff like that, and it doesn't make that much of an impact at the major league level, but that is something that definitely casual people like myself would have no real thought of. I mean, of factoring that into somebody's performance, especially a pitcher having to deal with that kind of travel.
Yeah, and Alan, to your first question there about Helsley, you know, what I will say is he is known to be a feisty competitor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that if he, if the message was conveyed to him as to why he was going to Springfield instead of Memphis, I think he'd be okay.
Yeah.
But the issue is, you know, and it's worth questioning, was the message conveyed? And, you know, without, I can't really speak to that, but, you know, he's a smart kid, he's a good kid, and the fact that you haven't necessarily heard anything from him since he's been down there, part of me thinks that that might be a little telling, but, you know, by and large, he's a professional, and if he wanted to impress, he might have done it a little bit, might have been overthrowing a little bit today, and maybe he'll settle in for that second start, but I wouldn't put it past him to be maybe a little extra fiery because he got sent down a level further than he should have been.
It's a situation, like you say, so many are having to deal with just because of this roster, you know, the glut of talent, which is, you know, again, people like to say it's a good problem to have. It's still a problem. And dealing with that, we continue to think that one of these years some people are going to be dealt off. That hasn't been the case yet. So we'll have to see how that goes. Let's go ahead and shift back into the major leagues and a topic that I had forgotten that we needed to talk about. Was the Tommy Pham article that came out in Sports Illustrated earlier this week, most of which we cannot repeat on the show.
Tune into Prospects After Dark on Monday.
don't read Tommy Pham's quotes there.
Except for I won't be read. It'll just be me accidentally saying it.
A lot in there. And Kyle, it kind of, you know, you... Because he deals with a lot of his time in the minor leagues. Does he have a point, I guess, when he's saying that the club really never believed in him? It kind of feels like there's at least some part of Tommy Pham that says the club still doesn't believe in him.
Oh, I don't want to answer this. No, so here's my thought. He was not given the same treatment that Grichuk and Piscotty were given. He was not given jobs when Piscotty and Grichuk were given jobs. So he has a point there, and it can be argued, just looking statistically, that he was more successful at the same levels than they were and was getting overlooked. So he does have a point. The way he did it was poor. there's a way to do it, but at the same time, I love the fact that he came out and he was vocal about it. I'm a hockey fan. I love hockey. I love watching hockey, but there's nothing more boring on earth than hearing a hockey player talk about hockey. And that's kind of what all professional sports have become. It's not until after a player is retired that he gets to celebrate his career by being honest about it. And we got a very, very real and raw moment of total honesty from a baseball player, and I'm happy for that. No matter how wrong or right he may have been, no matter how poor or how well he handled it, I feel like this extremely introverted person who is very private and very potentially emotionally compromised based on what was written later on in the article about his upbringing, was willing to let someone into his internal debate. And that, I liked that quite a bit.
Yeah, there is some aura of almost, you know, overcompensation, I think, there. Like you said, being... Sometimes when you are introverted, you go over the top when you want to get out of that comfort zone, if you will. So maybe there's some of that. Alan, again, like Kyle says, we tend to want our athletes to say something interesting until they do, and then we say you got to have more respect than that. What do you think?
none of it surprised me. I worried more about how it would be accepted in the media circles and the circles that, you know, the Cardinal social media that we do, because I was like, some of these responses aren't going to be very generous about this. I really thought that he handled it really well, not just the article, but the next day. I guess Hayes asked him about it right away, and he said, he goes, I feel bad about as much how vulgar I was in the interview. He said, that's my only regret. And I thought that was pretty cool that he would come out and say that. And he was like, when he read it, and he, you know, there's a little bit of a, maybe I shouldn't have done that and about that. But I do like the openness about it. It's funny that it's so accepted that it's kind of water under the bridge now. I mean, it's at what, we're less than a week, and it's now it's not that big a deal. Two things happened out of it that I thought were interesting. And if you guys heard either one of the interviews, let me know. And I won't have to go into it in depth, but Matt Holliday was on with Bernie, and they asked him about it. And Holliday was blunt. And Holliday goes, I would have an issue with it. He said, but we also know that that's the player he is. And he basically said what you said, Kyle. He said, he's not a robot. He goes, he says what he thinks. He goes, he's blunt. He's brazen. He said, but then that's why the guys liked him. And I thought that went a long way when Holliday said that. I was like, okay, that makes me think that this isn't going to be such a clubhouse issue, that it's going to be portrayed that it will. And if they start losing, it definitely will. But then, the second was on with Bernie on opening day, and they asked him about it. Of course, he was really cool in the answers, but he did do one thing that I thought was funny that kind of got looked over a little bit, but he wasn't going back at fam at all, but he did say, he says, well, we didn't show any faith in him, but when we drafted him as a shortstop, I had to go to Commissioner Selig at the time to pay over slot for him. He goes, you had to do that. You had to go through a committee after they approved it. If it went a little bit higher, or if they didn't approve it, you'd have to go higher, and you would have to go and ask the commissioner's approval on it. Well, it was fam that they did it on. So they did stretch their necks out a little bit, and he made sure to bring that up.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't remember if it was Derek Gould or somebody else. It may have been even Joe Mozeliak, who pointed out that, you know, they had to believe in him somewhat, because when Tommy was struggling with all the injuries and all the issues, they didn't cut him, which they easily could have done at some point in time, that they stuck with him at that point. Now, did they know what they had in him? Did they trust what they had in him? That's fair to say they probably didn't. Like you said, when you're, you know, the data point of Matt Adams playing the outfield over Tommy Pham, is a tough one to refute.
It was ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that just, it's difficult. I know they wanted to keep Matt Adams on the roster and try to make him somewhat productive. But, you know, I think most of us would have put Matt Carpenter out there before Matt Adams. And not that we would want Matt Carpenter out there, but still. So in that regard, I get that. And I just, you know, I think Tommy was, you know, again, he obviously has the right to express that, and I don't think that's going to get held against him too much. It doesn't sound like it. Although, if Tommy Pham gets traded later this year, everybody's going to think that it's held against him, even though, you know, that might have happened anyway just because of the roster situation. I think that sometimes Tommy didn't give enough credit to the fact that he did have injuries. I mean, it's not that he was just raking completely in the minors and they just completely overlooked. I mean, you know, it's not like he was, you know, Jose Martinez, who, what, led the league in hitting in the Royals organization and didn't get a call-up. It wasn't quite that way. But I don't think that's a situation that's ever going to be settled to Tommy Pham's benefit, and it's probably to the Cardinals' benefit that it doesn't. Because if Tommy Pham ever gets happy, then I don't know what happens.
And it's fun to hear them talk about how the teammates like to poke at him and like in a, just to get him fired up, because anything fires him up and then he starts hitting. Like I love that so much.
Yeah, I saw it was in Milwaukee. It was a fly ball that the fam got right in front of Dexter Fowler and caught. And Fowler was just I don't remember. It was just that I was kind of seriously poking at him and stuff. And then you see him joking around a little bit in the clubhouse, but in the dugout. But for a minute there, it almost looked like Fowler was ticked at him for getting over.
And, yeah, you could tell that he was upset with you. You're exactly right. I was like it. It took a little bit for that ice to break because you could tell that Fowler was a little irritated.
Yeah, yeah. And telling Tommy, yeah, you may be in center field now, but remember, I used to be there.
So nah.
I can still move. But you're right. I think that is. I think that's. It is. It has to be somewhat difficult to handle a personality like that and to accept a personality like that, especially when you're around them all the time. But so far the Cardinals seem to be doing that. Like I said, you know, we've had stories from last year where people thought Adam Wainwright was going to stand up and tell Tommy to settle down. He was perfectly fine with whatever Tommy was telling him. Things of that nature. He's been embraced by the players more than I would have necessarily thought, especially given the general culture of the clubhouse. Now, I will say from that article, it really doesn't feel like he's been embraced by the manager. It still may not be. I don't know that relationship is all that strong. But right now, fam plays because he's produced enough that even Mike Matheny can't bench him.
Do you say that because of the comments about batting eighth behind Magnura Sierra?
No, somewhat. But the main comment, the main thing I look at is he said, I think it was 2015 when he was sitting down. Was that the year that he got hurt in opening day and when he came back, they sent him down. And he says he threw numbers at Mike Matheny, and then the quote was, in retrospect or in looking back, that's something you don't want to do or something like that. And it made me feel that either it's because Mike Matheny doesn't appreciate the statistical part or Mike Matheny can hold a grudge if you're going to disrespect him like that. And that's where I got it from.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but batting eighth behind Magnus Sierra didn't help me either.
I love that. That was my two favorite poll quotes were that. I love that, and I also love where he talks about learning Spanish to hook up with Spanish women.
Yeah.
He's a total wild card. He's a wild card, not in like the way that I'm a wild card. He's in the opposite way that I'm a wild card. You know, he's a serious. He's just incredible.
And again, I feel like, I mean, one, it does depend on what the results are on the field, but I also feel like that kind of personality burns out its welcome quickly. To the point that, you know, again, two or three years of it is one thing, but I think, you know, and so far, again, if he's producing, then maybe people overlook it, but I feel like there's going to come a point where they're going to probably move him just because it is getting on people's nerves. We'll see, maybe not. But with Ozuna and Fowler out there, you know, and all, you know, 804 outfielders that are coming up, you know, he's in a delicate spot anyway. So something to watch out for. We've gone pretty long tonight. Alan, I know you said you had a few things we were talking about. Did we cover them all, or is there anything else you want to hit on?
We covered them all. One thing I do, it's not that big a deal. I just wanted to get it off my chest that I think the lineup's better with Jerko in it. I hope that when he comes back healthy, and it kind of builds on you something you wrote, how long do we stick with Martinez if he struggles? You know, how much of a leash is he going to get on this? I just feel like the lineup's better with Jerko in it. I think that you could tell when he did play this week. I think that probably hurts Wong more than anybody. But you're right. There's not a lot of extra base power right now out of Jose Martinez. So I know small sample size and all that. But yeah, that's pretty much all I wanted to cover. Just had a list of some stuff, and I knew that we would kind of wrap it all in at some point.
Have they given a prognosis on when Jerko might be ready?
No, I mean, I haven't heard anything. I worried about it, though, because I think it's the exact same hamstrings last year. So I was like, this could be a full year situation. I don't know. I don't know. I was excited to see, and, you know, and Adam and I were talking about it because he's a big Jose Martinez guy. And I said, hey, I think that Jericho is going to be the one that loses out on this. And he goes, well, probably should. Let's do if they can do a swap to where you're playing the high hand between Wong and Jericho. I think you're going to be in a good situation. I think they do see Jericho as a super sub type deal. But I just think he's a veteran hitter that needs to be in the lineup, and I think that you see a little. I think it's a little more fluid when he is in there, and I think he. I mean, he's a much bigger upgrade at third to Carpenter. I think he's a good third baseman. I felt bad for him when he made the comment of, I put in a lot of work in the offseason to avoid this very situation, and it happens in the first week of the season. So I don't know. I haven't heard anything. This doesn't look real promising. I mean, because it's one of those that we're going to worry about it all year now, regardless.
Yeah. He obviously shouldn't have been doing the conditioning drills with the pitchers. That seems to be whatever they're doing down there. Probably want to reevaluate if two guys get hurt before they leave and one guy gets hurt in the first week. I would think. I do like Jericho. I do, I think this at least gives, this in theory should give Wong some time. Now, if they're going to continue to play Munoz and things like that, and Wong's going to have to look over his shoulder, it's probably not going to help him out much. But it should give Wong a chance to get a pretty good run. For better or worse, it feels like Wong kind of needs that kind of security. So, but I do like the fact, one of the good things about Jericho out is, and, Alan, I've talked about this a lot. It's very, very difficult to have four starters for three spots.
Yeah.
And, to really juggle that well. It was funny. I was listening to the latest prospect to be named later, where Colin had talked or was in the media scrum with Johnny Rodriguez, which is the AA manager. And he was talking about how he was having to rotate players coming from on high, rotating people between second, short, and third. It's a difficult thing to do, I would think, to make sure that everybody's getting some regular playing time. I don't think any of us trust Mike Matheny to get that rotation right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that right now it works out pretty well. But you're right. I would like to have Jericho. I would like to have Jericho playing third on a regular basis. But
I agree. I agree with that. And you know what? And they're enamored with Jose Martinez, and they should be. I mean, he's hit since he's come up. But I'm just not certain yet that he's not more. He may be better in that utility role than Jericho is, or the super sub role than Jericho is, because I think you're better infield Jericho at third, Wong at second, and Carpet first. So I don't, but you know what? He has hit, and it turns into a situation to where they probably immediately, and maybe rightfully so right now, they immediately put Molina back in the five spot in the order, which I really think the Martinez fits well. So, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth on that. I think there needs to be more playing time chiseled out for Jericho, because I think he benefits the lineup, and I think he's the superior infielder.
Jose Martinez is a terrible defender. He is terrible.
Hey, you're right. And you know what he started to do that really drives me insane, Kyle? I hate the stealing the out. It's because he comes off the bag early just about every time.
Yeah.
Just watch him take the. It irritates me because I'm afraid it's going to cost him. It cost him somewhere to where he does the pull off the bag real quick, like he's trying to steal the out, even when it's not a bang bang play.
I'm going to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, it's of course, There are issues with everybody that seems to be playing in the infield to some degree, but
his are
more pronounced than others.
Exactly. I know it stands out right now because it was a throwing issue, but I do think that he's somebody that'll get over it quick. DeYoung's throws have been low and high. He's had a hard time hitting somebody in the chest. Has anybody else picked that up? they were all low early in the year, and he started overcorrecting. Of course, he overthrew Martinez. Well, if you're going to overthrow Martinez, if it's Carpenter there, it's probably in the second row of seats.
Yeah.
You know, with Martinez being 6'7". But it's funny. I think that he got tired of making those, and he threw two missiles on outs yesterday that about knocked his glove off.
Lots of fun. Kyle, anything you want to mention before we wrap it?
No, but I think we're talking about Matt Carpenter being, like, we're clamoring for Matt Carpenter at first over someone else. Like, just the idea of, all right, we want Matt Carpenter playing as a defensive replacement. Like, that should give us some kind of an idea of what exactly Jose Martinez is as a defender. But other than that, no, just, you know, for the listeners, let's get into a stretch here as we enter this, you know, the second week of the season. Let things play out a little bit and get a better feel for this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of baseball to go. I mean, we're just, you know, just that one weekend.
Exactly. And we've all had it out of the way too. All the opening day pressure, all that stuff's done. Now they start playing. I'm going off on this because I hate the Friday. It's so ridiculous. That's the last I want to say about it until they have the next one. But now they've got all this out of the way. Now it's the 7:05 first pitches. It's what they're used to. So it's the weather's going to get warmer. It's going to get better. I'm not disappointed with the start of the season, but you know we're back in baseball.
Yeah, it is kind of the nature of that first week, but the Cardinals still haven't played a 7:15 game yet.
No.
You know, had the six o'clocks and stuff like that, which is a little bit closer, but and they won't until Tuesday. It looks like so that'll be the first one, and that's the only one until they come back on the 20th, the weekend that we're going to be up there. So there's not a whole lot of that 7:15. In fact, you know, some night games on the West Coast. I guess there's a 7:05 in Chicago, but even this first month, there's a lot of day, a little bit different time. So it becomes a little difficult to get into that kind of rhythm, but we'll see if they can. Well, guys, appreciate it for joining us tonight. You know, Kyle, thanks for dropping the miners knowledge, and we look forward to you and Colin keeping us informed all year long over at Prospects Be Named Later.
Yeah, can't wait to do it. We'll bring it stronger next time. We'll have a little bit more information for you other than a game and a half worth of knowledge.
Well, you know, we don't have to be informed. We just kind of, you know, it's kind of nice. It's a change of pace. So, all right. Well, for Kyle and for Alan, and I'm Daniel. We'll talk at you later. Night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.